Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. There was a time, I think it was in high school, when I signed up for one of those Columbia House video clubs. And I knew I should not have gotten sucked in, but it was so alluring. You got a whole bunch of videos, almost no money up front. You know, maybe there was some lingering obligation to buy, but whatever. That was way in the future. Columbia House filed for bankruptcy not that long ago, but their idea of belonging to a club has taken off. And every brilliant 24-year-old who wants to revolutionize an industry says the revolution has to begin with belonging. Robbie Kelman-Baxter is the author of The Membership Economy, and John Warlow is the author of The Automatic Customer. Thanks to both of you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Kara. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's great to be here.
Robbie, explain to me what you mean by this idea of the membership economy.
The membership economy is a massive transformation that is changing the way organizations engage with their constituents. It's about a move from ownership to access, and it's about a move from transactional to relational. What's important to remember is that all human beings want to belong. They want to be recognized for being unique human beings, and they want to be held in high regard by their peers. So this is always an option that organizations that have an ongoing relationship with their customers can choose to use.
John, do you think there's a difference between the way that this concept of membership used to be used and the way it's used now? I mean, you used to hear membership as being about belonging to a religious group, let's say, not belonging to Blue Apron, which sends you meals ready to prepare for the next few days.
Yeah, you know, I think Robbie's right. You've got, you know, access is now more important to, in particular, young people than assets. So, for example, a lot of us grew up buying albums, buying tapes. Eventually, we all started downloading our music from iTunes. And then all of a sudden, Spotify and RDO came along and said, hey, you don't need to buy this stuff. Just subscribe, and we'll give you access to the world's largest music library. Now, Apple has fallen in line and offered Apple Music. Increasingly, you know, this idea that young people in particular want access to stuff, they don't necessarily want the yoke of assets. And if you look at the home ownership rate in the United States, it's dropping, especially since 2008. But young people today don't want the, you know, the big house and the white picket fence. They want access to stuff and experiences rather than, you know, assets and mortgages.
And you don't think that's going to change, you know, when people get more money and they can afford the big house? You don't think they're going to want it?
No, fundamentally, I think our world has become more about access. If you look at the way we buy software today, you know, I just got my Microsoft Office renewal notice. So we subscribe to Microsoft Office in our company, and we no longer buy the CDs out of Staples. We
right.
actually just subscribe to the information. And I think that's a fundamental change in the way we think.
Robbie, give me a sense of the convenience factor here. How much of this move towards membership or, you know, I know people in my building, you see them subscribe to diapers.com and they're like on automatic shipment, right? Because
right.
it's a lot easier than driving out and being in traffic and putting a whole ton of diapers into the back of your car. How much is this about people just not wanting to cancel that recurring charge on their credit card that comes every single month?
You know, the issue about recurring payments and people's inertia is definitely something that makes membership attractive to organizations. But I would argue that what the customers are saying is, I'm willing to sign up and to set it and forget it in exchange for having the value accrue to me on a regular basis. So I need those diapers every week because my kid is not going to get potty trained anytime soon, unfortunately.
Right.
Or, you know, I love getting Birchbox regularly because I like to have access to new products, and I'm willing to pay a premium to have access to things. And I think, you know, John made a great point about the fact that millennials are really catching on to this first, but I would argue that this is about something that all people want, which is I want to pay for the value that I'm using and not have to pay for stuff that I'm not using. So in the case of the homeowner, if I'm not there all the time, why do I need to have the burden of owning it fully?
Was there a turning point? When did this sort of reach a critical mass where now it feels like there are so many different companies to be members of or to subscribe to. And that just like wasn't the case 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, technology has
changed. Yeah. Go ahead, Robbie.
Yeah, I think we both have the same point, which is this has been something. It's not like it's a new idea that people are just now wanting it. It's that it's a new ability to make it available. And technology's extending the infrastructure of trust and making it possible for virtually every kind of organization to offer access as opposed to ownership, giving consumers new opportunities and new options.
Yeah, no, I mean, specifically, you think about how easy it is to now vet a company. I mean, you can basically vet the founders on LinkedIn. You don't have to give them your credit card. You can use PayPal. I mean, 10 years ago, I talked to Birchbox guys, and they would never have been able to launch Birchbox 10 years ago because there just wasn't trust built up in a startup to giving the credit card over the phone to or over the internet to a startup. Today, you know, so much of our lives have moved online that we're just comfortable giving these relatively young, you know, new companies our information. And that's a relatively new phenomenon.
You know, I want to go back to how this became such a big trend. Beyond the issue of technology, what were the companies or what were the turning points or who were the people that started to put this on the map?
So I would say the biggest one is Netflix. I worked with Netflix starting about 15 years ago, and I just fell in love with their business model because they were providing their customers with access to movies, no late fees, widest variety, and all of this was being done in a really simple way that met those customers' needs. And in fact, I think the only stumble that they've made was for that brief period where they weren't as transparent with their pricing change.
Right, I remember it. I mean, the stock tumbled. I mean, it was a real... People were upset about a sort of a change in what they had become accustomed to.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a key point of membership is that, you know, the advantage of membership and what attracts organizations to that model is that people, you know, are loyal, they're supportive, and they cut you a lot of slack. They don't check their bills every month. They don't keep rethinking the transaction. The other side of it, though, is that they have higher expectations in terms of the relationship, and they expect transparency and authenticity, which means if you have to do something differently, you have to explain to the customer why you're doing it in an honest way.
John, what were some of those big business shifts in your mind?
Well, I would agree with Robbie. Netflix was number one. Maybe a close second might have been Amazon. You know, Amazon Prime now has something like 40 million subscribers worldwide. So it's a $4 billion business if you do the math, $100 a year for 40 million customers. It's a huge, huge business for Amazon. What a lot of people don't really know about Amazon is that their entire business is moving to Amazon to subscription model. So you've got Amazon Mom. They're the new branded, you know, diapers.com. You've got Subscribe and Save. Well, you can sign up for a shipment of virtually anything Amazon sells on subscription. You've got Amazon Fresh that actually failed in Seattle. It wasn't until they made it a subscription model in Los Angeles did it actually get traction. So arguably, if you look at the Fortune 500, the company that has the most invested in the success of the subscription model arguably could be Amazon.
So they want then a time where you're subscribed to Amazon for dishwashing detergent, they know you need that once a month, and milk, they know you need that once a week, and broccoli, they know you need that, whatever, once every 2 weeks. I mean, is that what you're saying? Is that where this is going?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about diapers, you need them on a regular basis if you have kids. Amazon Instant Video, you need content in the form of television, movies on a regular basis. You can subscribe. Amazon Fresh is about groceries, so you can have groceries delivered like in the old Peapody, you know, web van model,
right,
bringing to your door. So, you know, they want to own the entire wallet, and they don't want to own it on a transactional level because they know they've to get a transaction, they have to stimulate demand, they have to run advertising, they have to convince you to come to their website and then make the transaction. There just aren't the margins in dish soap and diapers to do that. But they know that if you buy and make one economic decision and then buy on a regular recurring basis, they can afford to get you to the site and buy from them. So they've got a big bet on subscription models.
Robbie, talk about other companies or other areas that you see moving in this direction in order kind of to stay alive, to stay robust that, well, you know, maybe we wouldn't even think about.
Yeah. So one of the most interesting trends that I'm seeing right now is that the consumer packaged goods companies themselves are trying to move to membership. So we see that with things like Birchbox, where they have, you know, small samples and, you know, unique boxes of products. But we're also seeing it with the P&Gs of the world that are exploring and testing this ongoing replenishment model where they go direct to consumer. Because these, you know, Amazon and the other retailers have really disintermediated the consumer from the product, which used to be the only way that you could do business. But now the companies can go direct to consumer. So that's really what I think is going to be the next major component of the membership economy.
So you're seeing paper towel manufacturers say, you know, forget Walmart. We don't need to go through Walmart and have them take half our money anyway, right? Because there's always a markup when it goes into a store. We'll send you paper towels direct from Bounty or whatever.
Right. Here's an example. Depends, right? You know, the adult diapers. People don't want to go into the store and buy them. And then they have the issues of, you know, what size do I need and how do they work? And I have uncomfortable questions. It's not really designed to be sold at retail. And it actually works much better if it's done direct. And there's a stronger relationship in that case between the company and the consumer. And the relationship is going to last most likely for a long time. So it's perfect for this kind of membership model.
Robbie, as you're talking, I'm just envisioning cracking open the bag of Depends and Walgreens and actually, you know, trying the size of those.
On a different note, traditionally, public radio and public television have really been into this idea of belonging to some sort of club. You know, you get a tote bag or you get a mug. And what those things say is, okay, this is a brand I support. And you know, I carried around the office to show that. Were they, in some sense, at the beginning here of this membership economy?
Oh, Kara, this is such a good question. So, you know, nonprofits and associations really have been the pioneers of membership. You know, they're the ones that have been thinking about, you know, joining and dues and the glow that you get from belonging to organizations that you believe in. But I would argue that they're falling behind in terms of what's possible. And in a lot of cases, they're missing opportunities. So if organizations go back to what is their fundamental mission and then say, how can we best provide those values to our members? I think they'd be doing a lot more than mugs.
Okay, so for anyone who wants to take this, if a public radio executive called you into his or her office, you know, what would you suggest to them?
You know, there's got to be a really strong, tangible, practical benefit to subscribing. I don't think you can just say it's a philanthropic endeavor to, you know, to write your $100 a year check to NPR. I think you really have to provide value for that. And I mean, it could be mugs, but as long as people perceive those mugs to be of value, again, I think there is a, you can't necessarily hold yourself out as it's a philanthropic investment. I think people have become way more pragmatic than that. At least the ones we see and the ones I researched certainly make, you know, very specific buying decisions based on, am I going to get value from this subscription?
Super, super high-tech mugs. I have a question for both of you, finally. Are there challenges that this membership or subscription economy will bump up against? For example, I mean, you can only have so many monthly fees taken out of your bank account every month because, you know, at some point you don't have any money anymore. And there's also, it can be hard to be loyal to 20 brands rather than, say, 4 or 5. John, let me go to you first. Are there hurdles for this?
Yeah, you know, I think you raise an interesting one from the consumer perspective. I call it subscription fatigue. When you look at your credit card statement and it runs down to three pages now, that's a problem.
Right.
I think for businesses, though, there's also a major hiccup, and that is that the likes of Amazon and Target and Walmart and Starbucks are all in on the subscription model, which is really cannibalizing or undermining the business models of very small businesses. And so when I can subscribe, for example, to Amazon to ship me a 60-pound bag of dog food, I no longer need to trudge down to the local pet food store. And so for me, the biggest liability is actually very small businesses that are, you know, are clinging to a transactional relationship with their customers where perhaps perhaps they've relied on proximity in the past because they happen, you know, customers are close to me. That's why they shop from me. Those businesses are going to go away.
I think the other big issue that organizations face is that there's a lot of Me Too-ism right now. Like, companies are just saying, we want to be a membership company or we want to have a subscription model, but they haven't really thought through the value to the consumer. They've been more focused on the value to themselves. And so, as with any new trend or new kind of business model, the organizations really have to think through, what's the value that I'm creating? Because, you know, several organizations, including, for example, Adobe, when they switched from being a transactional business model to requiring subscriptions to their software, they got a lot of backlash because not all consumers felt like that was creating additional value for them.
Robbie Kelman-Baxter is the author of The Membership Economy, and John Warlow is the author of The Automatic Customer. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Go to our website, innovationhub.org, to learn about this week's guests, the work they do, and the companies they've talked about. You can also get more info on Facebook, facebook.com/innovationhubradio. From PRI and WGBH Radio, I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub.